Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our guest, Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated and the MMQB podcast. Connor, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us. So we have to start, Connor, with this wild trade you whipped up in your mock draft involving the Titans and LA Rams. In your projected trade, you have the Titans receiving picks numbers 13, 61, 93, and a 2027 first round pick for the number 4 and number 101 pick in the draft. How did you come up with that?
So if the trade was executed, and let's say the Rams get Jeremiah Love and win the Super Bowl or come close to winning the Super Bowl, it would basically be, so I use like a trade calculator, and it would basically be like a net 600-point trade win for the Titans. And my reason for doing that, because I got a lot of flack for that, of all things, like it doesn't quite work out in the trade value chart, is if you're the Titans and you're going to trade Jeremiah Love to the Rams and you know he's going to go there and look like a magician, you have to pay a little bit of an extra tax because of there's going to be kind of the optics of letting this guy go and then watching Sean McVay turn him into a star. So if I'm Robert Saleh, I just want a little sweetener on top of it. So that's where the extra pick came from. But the reason why I'm thinking about this is because the Rams never pick this high, and every time they get this high, they do something crazy. I think when they were at 9 the last time when Les Snead was the GM, that's when they traded up to get Jared Goff. They always expect to be in the final 4. They usually are in the final 8 in some respect. And so this is a team that we don't know what's going on with Puka Nacua. We don't know what's going on with, you know, Devontae Adams. How much longer is he going to be part of the offense when Matt Stafford phases out? Like, Jeremiah Love's a cornerstone. I mean, he's a guy who can be great for you for the life of this contract.
Connor, you wrote an excellent feature about Jeremiah Love for Sports Illustrated. The headline, Why Jeremiah Love is the NFL's Next Superhero. I recommend all Titans fans read this story, especially if the team drafts Love tomorrow night. What was the most fascinating thing you learned about Love as a player in person as you reported the story?
I think just the fact that, he had like something like 9.5 carries a game in high school, which is nothing for an elite prospect, right? He was a top 5 Rivals running backs recruit. And the reason was because his best friend was also a running back, and they ran a 2-back offense, and he would defer plays in the huddle so that his best friend could have a better shot at getting to college. And he would say things like when Marcus Freeman would call from Notre Dame or Dan Lanning from Oregon, he would say, I don't care, I'll sign right now if you also sign my best friend Dylan, because he's really good and no one knows about him yet. And I think he just has this very unique sense of good and bad, of right and wrong, that is so different from anybody else. And his parents did that thing on College Game Day that kind of talked a little bit about the fact that he may be neurodiverse, but I think in a lot of ways, it makes him such a better teammate. It makes him, you know, such a unique person. And everyone to a man that I spoke to kind of backed that up and reiterated that.
My colleague Derek Mason over here, Connor, is the conductor of the Jeremiah Love train. A lot of Titans fans,
complete with soundtrack behind it.
Yes, a lot of soundtrack. A lot of Titans fans want him very badly. How disappointed should Titans fans be if the team doesn't draft Love tomorrow, if he's available when they pick?
It's a good question. I mean, if you wind up with Sonny Styles, you have to think too, right? It's like, I mean, Sonny Styles is going to do something for Robert Saleh's defense that no other player in the draft can do. And that's harder to sell, and it's probably harder to put on a season ticket package when you're opening a new stadium. And I do think that these are factors that are going to be considered when you're drafting that high and you're looking at a player like Love at the top of the draft. But, you know, I think he's exceptional. Do I think he's any better of a prospect than Saquon Barkley? No. But, I mean, Saquon Barkley had some really spectacular seasons. And so if you're the Titans and you have that long lineage of great backs who have helped transform your offense, all that kind of stuff, I mean, yeah, it probably stinks to pass up. And, again, this is a draft with so few premium players, like eight, nine, ten, right? And so if you're letting one of those go and passing one of them up for an immediate upgrade on defense, I get it. I mean, it's going to be a tough sell.
Now, Connor, we're going to go back to your article because I suggest that everyone go back and read it. SI.com, his article on Jeremiah Love. I loved it. You know, Adam, I think, expressed how much that I love this kid as a player. But reading an article, it allowed me to like him even more as a person. I'm sort of close to it because my son loves all of this anime. So when he's talking about it, I can kind of relate. I've sat through a movie where they fought one scene for over 45 minutes. So I'm committed when it comes to that. But what other sort of morals or things did that teach him?
So Jeremiah's interesting, right? I mean, mm-hmm. He came to his mom around the time that he was in grade school and said, hey, like, I don't know what's going on with me, but I don't feel joy. I don't feel sadness. I don't feel hatred. I don't feel anything. And at the moment, his mom was really alarmed by that. But as she kind of got more educated on neurodiversity and the fact that everybody kind of experiences things differently, she allowed Jeremiah to kind of find his own way. And anime and comic books and superheroes, they come with that baked in set of morals, right? It's good and bad. It's evil. It's right and wrong. And so I think that was a great opportunity for him. And when he saw these guys crying, when he saw them expressing sadness or any sort of emotion, he kind of felt it too. And he said it really kind of opened him up to this whole different world of experiences, you know?
Yeah, and even reading it more, and again, I suggest those that haven't read it or go to SI.com and check it out. Because this kid, I think he's fascinating. And I think wherever he goes, you know, he will bring not only you know, production to the field, but also production to their to the community which he's in. But at the beginning of the year, college year, there were several quarterbacks that were mentioned that could be drafted, you know, in the first round. As we see now, there's really only one, and maybe Ty Simpson is a second. But where did individuals go wrong in evaluating guys like Drew Aller or Nussmeier and some of the other ones?
You're right. I mean, we wrote about that this week. We had Scott Turner on, who was a longtime offensive coordinator, and he was making fun of us because we were saying, oh, teams should be trading for more 2027 capital, 2027 capital. And he said, hey, when I was in the league, you guys were saying that about 2026. You were saying, oh, it's going to be Nussmeier and Aller, and it's going to be, Arch Manning and all that stuff. And so the truth of the matter is with NIL and with opportunities, we have no idea when these kids are going to come out. Their coaches leave so soon. We have no way to grade them on any sort of a standard kind of ascension rubric. And so it's really hard. And it comes down to kind of your scouting fundamentals and what you believe. And I think that, you know, all these guys had really difficult spots. Aller and Nussmeier lost their coaches mid-year. Aller lost Tyler Warren in the first round of the draft, who was maybe one of the greatest outlet receivers for a quarterback over the last 10 years that we've seen. And so all this stuff happens, and it just complicates a kid's development. And then you look down the future, and all of a sudden, all these quarterbacks that you think are going to be here are either not good enough, or they're going to try to stay in school and improve their stock.
Connor Orr is with us from SI.com, also co-host of the MMQP podcast, a staple of mine, along with Albert Breer. Great stuff. Connor, one more on Jeremiah Love that caught me from your article, because what you guys talk about a lot on the podcast is how what separates Jeremiah Love is he's not just a runner. He could be easily a prospect as a receiver, so that versatility is good, and he can block. And I think about the story you referenced with Adam about his best friend. He wanted to get more carries, so he almost taught himself how to be a blocker. He was blocking a lot more than great running back prospects. I'm sure that was sort of a secondary thing he probably didn't think about, but it's made him even more valuable.
Willingly taking on contact for that position, I think, is rare, right? I mean, especially for your top guys, right? I mean, your Bijan Robinsons, all that. Like, these guys aren't signing up to take, you know, 25 to 30 pass block reps a game. I mean, they're signing up to be exceptional on the field and to get the ball with room to run. And I think Jeremiah is like that, but there's less ego there, right? And there's more of just a, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do on this play. And he was a very willing blocker. And I think one of the things that all of his coaches at every level pointed out were, hey, he had so many 70, 80, 90 plus yard runs. His best runs were all 1 to 2 yards. And there are so many more of those that just, you don't put them on film, but there's cutups that can be 15 minutes long of him getting a yard where he's dead to rights 3 or 4 yards in the backfield. And that's the thing, if I'm the Titans, that I'm probably excited about, because your offensive line still has a little ways to go.
No question. Now, let's say they rain on Derek's parade of the love train. It's something you guys talked about extensively in your recent podcast, Connor, and that is Arizona takes Jeremiah Love, which would leave you the choice between Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles, who are different players but both elite in their own right. So what do you think that choice would be like if that's what the Titans are presented?
I think it's Styles, and this isn't a knock on Reese, but I mean, we have yet to see him with his hand in the dirt. I think I went back and I looked the other day at some of the different scouting reports on him. I don't think he's taken a snap out of a three-point stance defensively yet. Now, does that really matter? I don't know. I mean, there's coaches that say, I can get Fernando Mendoza ready to play under center in 25 minutes if he's paying attention. And so I don't know. But I think if I'm Robert Saleh, it's like, I kind of know Sonny Styles was doing Fred Warner stuff at Ohio State. I can see that. I can call Matt Patricia, who's been an NFL defensive coordinator for 2 decades, and he can relay how he would fit into my defense pretty easily, and I think that that's a really easy thing. Reese is going to take some imagination, and maybe he's Micah Parsons, but like, it's that old adage where it's like, you know, you already know what you have in Sonny Styles, and I think Robert Saleh needs players more than anything right now, right? I mean, that's what this whole thing with this roster turnover has been about. So it's just about getting quality players, and I think Styles fits the bill there.
If Arizona doesn't trade down, as you guys speculate that Monty Austin Ford, a former Titans assistant GM, would like to do, do you think the Titans could find somebody that really wants to dive in on Arvell Reese? You could move down a couple of notches and maybe still get Sonny Styles? Is that perfect storm out there, or do you think it's just not a match?
I think it's out there. I think it's just like, really, when we're talking about who wants Arvell Reese, I think, at least for me, and I have to challenge this all the time, is like, is my reasoning that Jerry Jones let Micah Parsons go and he would love the idea of getting someone who may be like Micah Parsons for a fraction of the cost and then basically wash his hands of the whole, you know, the poor optics of the trade. I mean, that's the team that I see moving up for him. Will they do it? I don't know. I think, you know, this market, you know, Reese is a guy that I think could also drop, right? Because we're just not sure how to use him. Micah Parsons went 11th or 12th, right? And so I think that's one of those really interesting scenarios where if you love him, you could go up and get him if you're worried about someone else taking him. But there's been so much posturing from these GMs in the top 4 or 5 about Reese that it just makes you wonder, like, is anybody really locked in or sold on him?
Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated is with us. Connor, a major reason why we have been talking so much around here about Jeremiah Love is because he should, theoretically, help Cam Ward develop in year 2. How would you evaluate Ward's rookie season, and how are you feeling about him as he enters year 2 in the NFL?
It's funny, we were talking about this the other day, and I would say, like, if you were to compile, like, the 20 coolest throws, like, just based on circumstance, you know, difficulty of opponent, lack of talent around him, I mean, if you were to factor all that into the grading scale, like, I would say probably like 13 of the 20 coolest throws that I saw last season were ones that were Cam Ward. Now, you know, I could also say that about Spencer Rattler. So, like, don't, you know, I don't want to overrate that in my mind, right? But I think that he is, you know, I think that those, like, Mahomes light comps are still legitimate to me because he just has such great body control. I mean, he's always looking down the field. This can be an explosive play offense, and it's the kind of quarterback that Dable has won with before. I mean, to me, again, I mean, to comp him to Mahomes and Allen, I don't think is accurate, but to say that he's a big body that's not afraid of contact, he keeps his eyes downfield, I mean, maybe Roethlisberger-esque, you know, I still think that that's out there. I didn't see anything in terms of like a developing fatal flaw that really scared me out of him.
Connor, one thing to build off of that, that we talk about a lot is just the, I don't know if nostalgia is the right word, but the sexiness of moving into a new stadium with kind of a reboot of Derek Mason's era, right? You've got Steve McNair and Eddie George. They were the signature guys when Nashville got a football team. And I just wonder if that's in the back of the mind of Amy Adams Strunk or if that enters into Mike Borgonzi's psyche at all, the ability to have the ticket sales that will go with that. It's just such a marketable thing if Love is sitting there, even if maybe deep down they think that Styles or somebody else is a better fit.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt. This hung over the last regime. Like, there's no question about it. You know, I think it's probably one of those situations based on how much they loved Brian Callahan in the moment when they hired him, that maybe they would have liked to have given him a third year, but they got to develop some hype. They got to sell some season tickets. Like, they have to, you know, this is not one of those things that, you know, you look at the way that the Rams approach things, hired a really dynamic coach in Sean McVay, who was a bit of a curiosity at the time. You know, you're trading up for guys like Jared Goff a year before you're moving out there. I mean, there's stuff that you need to do to lay the groundwork and to build excitement, and hope is the great currency in the NFL, and I just don't think they had it last year. And so I've been of the mind that, you know, that's why when I saw the tenor of the mocks changing lately, where everyone's saying, oh, well, I do think maybe the Titans will go defense at four, I think Robert Saleh knows he can build a good defense. He had a good defense last year with like eight of his starters injured. You know, I think what they can't do is manufacture hype. And I think that Jeremiah Love fits the bill there.
Now, Connor, we've discussed on the show, what is that line of demarcation where if the Titans do choose to move back, how far can they go to, and still get a impact elite guy? Now, we start to see that Jordan Tyson is the guy that is climbing up the charts. Obviously, you got Carnell Tate there. Do both of those guys or one of those guys sort of fit that, hey, if you want him, you got to get him in the top 10 or maybe top 11.
I've been hearing that on Tyson lately. I'm wary of, it's like the, I forget there's like a name of like the phenomena, but it's like something that happens right before the draft. And it's a really good, you know, it's a great job by his agent to have that workout happen essentially a week before the draft starts, because in your mind, maybe he looks better, he looks stronger, he looks different from a receiver that you've been evaluating who's tired at the combine and who just got through a 14-game season, right? Maybe he pops a little bit more. And so I think, you know, these teams have had dinner with this guy, all that stuff. There's still an injury history there that scares me. There's a lot going on there. And so I think Tyson is one of those classic, like, late risers that maybe if he goes 12, 13, everyone's going to ask what happened, but I think he might have just always been there.
Connor, along those lines, there is a lot of misdirection at this time of year. There seemingly are conflicting reports coming out every day. Which one of these recent reports are you buying the least?
Where do we start? Like, I mean, all of them? I mean, you know, like, that's the thing. Like, it's crazy. It feels like Groundhog Day, and it's the same with any major contract negotiation where it's like, oh no, like, this guy's really not going to sign. He's really not going to sign. And then 48 hours before the franchise tag deadline, he signs his contract, right? Every year. But we fall for it. And I think this is the same thing where we watch these guys all fall. We rank them, we evaluate them, we do the Senior Bowl, we do the Combine, we have the intel from the Combine, and we have kind of an idea of where everything fits, and then for some reason, 2 weeks before the draft, everything goes absolutely insane for no reason. That's when I turn my TV off, right? I mean, I remember, you know, I used to cover the Jets, and there was a year where it was like, oh no, it's not Quinnen Williams, it's definitely Ed Oliver now, and throw everything you thought out the window. No, I mean, you know, some of this stuff is just, well, you know, I think we watch too much TV at some point, and I think that's when I know to turn it off.
Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated and the MMQB podcast has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. You can read his work at SI.com, including his latest feature on Jeremiah Love titled Why Jeremiah Love is the NFL's Next Superhero. Connor, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the NFL draft, and we'll have to do this again soon.
You too, guys. Good luck.
615-737-1025. We will react to Connor coming up next. You can as well. 615 737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. A big thank you to Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated for joining us in the previous segment. Noted Notre Dame fan Pete Weber in the house.
Yes.
I'm sure he's on the train. He's got to be Jeremiah Love. Pete Weber, Max Herz, Willie Donick, Terry Crisp coming up at 6 o'clock.
Boom.
For the Predators
Crispy
season
wrap-up
show.
Crispy and I are splitting duties as the third guy, the third man in. I got the first half. Crispy's got
the
second. Two
very different personalities.
Oh, yes. We've got to shake it up. We've got to shake it up a little bit.
So the Predators wrap-up show coming your way at the top of the hour, featuring Willie Donick, Max Herz, Pete Weber, and Terry Crisp. Here is just a sample of what people thought of our interview with Connor Orr of Sports Illustrated on our YouTube chat. One person says, quote, "This guy is a doofus. The Titans aren't giving up number four for a mid-round first and a late-round first next year." One person responded, "Your mom is a doofus." And then that same person said, "Great perspective. Great interview. Definitely going to read his article. And I don't read many articles on sports. I highly recommend you read."
Can we cease with the name calling, please?
I mean, doofus.
So
doofus,
yeah,
is,
so
doofus is a good word. Doofus
so childish,
is criminally underrated as an insult.
It really is. I mean, that's just it's just great to say, call someone a doofus.
Doofus. I mean, it just it's good. I like it. Let's quickly go over that mock trade that Connor Orr made at SI.com involving the Titans and the LA Rams. Projected trade. Titans received numbers 13, 61, 93, and a 2027 first round pick. So that's a first round this year, a second round this year, a third round this year, and a first round next year, if my math is right. The Rams would move up to four and would also receive 101. That, and then the Rams would draft Jeremiah Love in that spot with the number four overall pick. The Titans would move down to 13 and draft Mekhi Lemon, the wide receiver from USC. I don't know, Willie Donick. You're a big trade down guy.
The next year's first is intriguing to me. And this is Nick Suss made a funny point about this, and I agree, because you hear this every year. Well, next year's draft is going to be really good. Next year's draft is the one you really want to have your ducks in a row. And there's no way you can know that, especially now, the way guys stay in school, right? A lot of guys say, well, I can make $4 million, play one more year of college. I'm doing that. So that being said, still, another first-round pick next year, that does fall into line with their goal of getting a lot of top 100 picks. That's a pretty good haul for moving down nine spots. Now, what you're giving up is what we talked about, this particular draft. I don't think you're, by all accounts, if you believe what the consensus of the experts, the analysts say, you will not get the stud at 13.
It's almost like because at least to me, if you're not getting two first rounders and they end up being high first rounders, then it's like Mia Kim saying, I'd rather take a B-plus or a B-guy over an A-plus guy. You got the A-plus talent sitting here. If you're not getting, you know, a high pick this year or two high picks this year and potentially a high pick next year if you're not getting two this year, then it's – to me, you just don't – you never know what the next draft is going to look like. Again, we talking with Connor Orr. It's like, where did people make that mistake last year? Well, because they chose to evaluate these guys and said they're coming out and this is what they're going to be. And then they get in the season and it's totally opposite. And the guy that they never talked about ends up being the guy that's going number one.
That's why over the long haul, that study would tell you to do that trade in a heartbeat, right? It's just that you have to evaluate the long haul versus this particular draft this year. And that's where that's the brilliance, I think, of the study, is because it avoids the psychological stuff. Oh, man, we could be passing on Jeremiah Love. Could we really deal with it if Jeremiah Love became a star and we had a chance to get him and we didn't take him? You know, there's that influences people because people are human, right? Whereas a computer would tell you, boom, 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 Maybe it's the Jimmy Johnson thing. I would have to think that's pretty good value. Have you done the Jimmy Johnson on that?
I haven't, but I should. In the meantime,
did you see his eyes light up when
yeah,
I said?
Yeah, he's like, "Ooh, yeah. I didn't even think about it.
Assignment." I love.
I can do like math.
It's like, man, I didn't even think about that.
Hot diggity! One texter says the Rams' first round pick next year most likely in the high 30s, which is basically a second round player. Robert says the Titans getting fleeced is par for the course. Maybe with the 13th pick overall, they can get a kicker. Another texter says you don't want to make that trade with the Rams. Jeremiah Love is that kind of player. Again, Connor Orr, our guest in the preview segment, had a mock draft at SI.com earlier this week. He had a projected trade. The Titans receive numbers 13, 61, 93, and a 2027 first-round pick in exchange for number 4 and number 101. He writes, by the way, quote, "Love is a physical back who lives for outside zone, which is a small part of the McVay offensive lexicon, but showcases his patience and brilliance and can help protect Matthew Stafford on the back end. While there isn't necessarily a game-changing receiver that fits into the Rams universe, Love in what could be Stafford's final season may conquer all. The Titans may like the idea of having a 2027 chip to play if the new coaching staff decides Cam Ward isn't the long-term answer."
So then they... how did that even get into the equation?
Well, I would assume that if Cam Ward struggles this season and the new coaching staff decides I'm not sure he's our guy, you've got an extra first-round pick to maneuver if you need to move.
Nah, I couldn't see them. He would have to completely do a 180 for them to make a rash move like that.
Yeah.
You know, so
it does happen over the course of history.
But it usually takes some years. Especially if a guy has played well and you see progression, even if the second season isn't, you know.
It would not be good.
Exactly.
It would not be good if that happened.
Yeah, but then they still wouldn't be looking to remove, you know, exactly.
Here's the most fascinating
part. You would have a hard time believing, oh, this is really him. You would have said, well, sophomore slump or whatever.
Here's the most fascinating part of our two guests today. They have completely different views on Sonny Styles.
Completely different.
Nick Suss, no on Sonny Styles. Connor Orr, quick to jump on Sonny Styles. So that to me was very interesting. Both of them incredibly bright and know the game. But I found it fascinating that Suss and Orr were on complete opposite sides of the Sonny Styles debate.
But maybe that's how, you know, what if that's how they feel inside of the war room? And if those two individuals are on the board, do you just say, you know, I'm drafting Jeremiah Love?
I mean, I think it was –
both of them. I'm drafting
Love. I think it was Todd McShay. He was on the Rich Eisen show, and he had this sort of fly-on-the-wall hypothetical in the Titans war room at number 4. And what he landed on was Brian Daboll saying to Robert Saleh and Mike Borgonzi, "Robert, why did we get fired from our head coaching jobs in New York? Because we couldn't get our offense going consistently. And that's why in this scenario, this hypothetical scenario, McShay said, I think the Titans are taking Love." Now, that might have changed because of all of the smoke around the Cardinals and Love at number 3 overall. But to me, this is a point a lot of people have made. The Titans spent so much capital on the defense in free agency. The best player they brought in on offense was Wandale Robinson. And Wandale Robinson is a good player, had a breakout year this past season with Malik Nabers out injured for the Giants, but he doesn't excite you that way. He's not going to completely change the trajectory of the Titans' offense. And you've made this point a million times, Derek. Coaches get fired not because coaches get fired more often for their offenses stinking than their defenses stinking, if I recall your point correctly.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, look at Cincinnati. I mean, if he had a bad offense, if he'd had a quarterback that he has and the receivers that he has.
Zach Taylor,
he would have been fired. If he didn't have an offense and his defense was good, he would have been fired.
And now they have Dexter Lawrence.
Exactly. So, again, patience is sort of appreciated or patience is given when you have a high-powered offense, because everybody's looking for that quarterback, they're looking for that receiver. So I'm going to give you a little bit more leeway if you have a really good offense and a bad defense. But if you have a bad defense and your offense isn't scoring anything, then, yeah, you're more likely to get fired quicker.
One texter says, Daboll wanted Ward over Dart. Ward is going to ball in that offense. I think it would help if Jeremiah Love was in it. One texter says, don't the Rams already have a Notre Dame running back? Is Kyren Williams from Notre Dame?
I don't know.
Indeed he is.
Ah, there you go.
So, why not double up on the Fighting Irish? Look, the first round of the draft starts in roughly 24 hours. As Nick Suss said, let it be Sunday. Just because we've spent, I can't even imagine the hours we've spent since the end of the football season talking about the NFL draft. And I thank the Predators very, very much for making things interesting down the stretch so we could talk some Predators instead of overloading on the NFL draft. So I am ready for the draft tomorrow. I am ready to see who the Titans pick. I am ready to come in on Friday at 3 and talk about that player, and we can finally know who that person is going to be. As we've gotten closer, for whatever reason, maybe it's all of these conflicting reports, mm-hmm. I'm becoming less and less certain that it's going to be Jeremiah Love. For a while, I'm like, who else could it be?
That's what they want you to think.
Well, see, I'm falling.
That's what they want everybody to think.
I'm falling victim.
That's what they want everybody to think.
But I'm not a decision maker. I mean, there are people out there who are paid to make these decisions that are like, I don't know what the Titans are going to do at number 4. But we'll see.
But didn't Connor mention, listen, what was that, Nick? It might have been Connor. These guys are, you know, the hay is in the barn. They've seen everything they needed to see. And, yeah, when you're talking about later round guys, yeah, there may be, still trying to figure some things out. But I got to believe with the top guys, if you're an organization, unless something just completely Laramie Tunsil, I got to believe that whoever they are going to pick, they are going to take them, regardless of what the smoke look like, or smoke screen looks like, or what's being said, or what's being pushed out. I just have to believe that if you've been doing all of this scouting and preparing all the way up to the draft, that you still don't know who you're drafting? Nah, I can't believe that.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the NFL draft. We'll wrap up the show coming up next by discussing one of the darndest things I've ever seen at a professional sporting event. We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The Predators season wrap-up show coming up at the top of the hour, featuring Willie Donick, as well as Max Herz, Pete Weber, and the one and only Terry Crisp. We will be live tomorrow at T-Line in West Nashville, 106 Duluth Avenue, in the nation's thereabouts, ahead of the NFL draft. Come and join us. And, of course, our draft night in Nashville will also be at T-Line Nashville, featuring Derek Mason. Who else is on the panel with you?
It's going to be myself, Big Joe, and Chase, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chris Sanders wasn't available?
No, Chris Sanders.
Too busy?
He is. No. I think Chris is there.
How can you have draft night in Nashville without Chris Sanders?
I know he's there Saturday. I know he's there
Friday.
But I'm sure he's there for Thursday, too. But it's going to be Big Joe.
I wonder how Chris is doing. I haven't talked to Chris in a while. Chris, if you're listening, we miss you.
He's being a little Bill somewhere.
Can't wait to dunk on you during silly underdog picks again in the fall.
Oh, man. He's going to have another terrible year.
Or win it going away.
Yes.
It's usually one or the other.
There is no gray area.
He's going to have a terrible year. He's going to hit for 30 points in one game. Right. It's going to end it all.
There is no gray area in silly underdog picks with Chris Sanders. So a lot of draft coverage coming up tomorrow. Again, we will be live at T-Line in West Nashville ahead of the NFL draft and our draft night in Nashville coverage. But I want to end the show this way. There is a certain type of fan that I cannot, I just can't do. And you know who you are if you go to Predators games, hockey games in general. The glass banger. The glass bangers are just the absolute worst.
Not the head bangers.
I head bang a little bit.
The head bangers was a group back in the day. The head bangers is a rap group back in the day.
So. Well, I also do like to head bang because I like to listen to loud music.
Okay.
But the glass bangers. And last night we had Exhibit A of why the glass bangers are the absolute worst. So last night in Denver, Kings Avalanche in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I am just going to read from the Associated Press copy. Quote, DJ Smith felt the pushing from behind and then the glass raining down on him. He didn't have time to duck out of the way. Los Angeles's interim coach had shattered glass fall on him after a pane broke behind the Kings bench Tuesday during Game 2 against Colorado. It happened right after Quinton Byfield was stopped on a penalty shot by Avalanche goaltender and former Predators goaltender Scott Wedgwood with 16:48 remaining in the second period. The glass began to sway as fans pounded on it in excitement and then gave way. With pieces raining on Smith, he covered his head and brushed the glass off his suit before heading down the tunnel to the locker room. He returned a few minutes later.
This delayed the game for 17 minutes.
The problem that I have with this is that...
And the guy did not get kicked out.
He didn't get kicked out.
Oh, he shouldn't have.
He got moved, right? He got moved, but he did not get kicked out.
If he was a fan, he shouldn't have got kicked out. Moving him is cool, but kicking him out, then that...
What about picking up the tab for the broken glass?
Yeah, he needs to pick up the tab for the broken glass. But I can see if this was the game-winning goal. If this was a game-winning goal in the glass and it broke, okay, I can understand that. But this, they still had another period to play?
Half a game, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the second period.
It's like, seriously, dude. You must have one, five too many.
I love the eyewitness account of somebody that was sitting.
I'm looking for that right now.
A little bit over from where it happened. It was like the guy just kept, his word was wailing. He kept wailing on the glass, and sure enough, it just shattered. I didn't think that glass was made of that material that could shatter like it used to. They used to have what's called seamless glass, which was easier to see through for a fan, but it was much more dangerous when a guy would hit his head on there, and of course, when it shattered, it would shatter bad. Now they have the softer, it gives more, the plexiglass. So I was surprised to see it go like that. You don't see that as much as you used to. Like, we went the entire year this year without anything shattering quite like that. But
it's one really, thing.
But like, why is the fan doing that? Like,
the stress
go crazy, yell, scream. But, I mean, there's a controlled way to bang on the glass, but you got to bang on it pretty hard to get it to do that.
Peter Ball.
You couldn't see. Like, on the camera angle, you couldn't see exactly his motion. But you'd have thought he had an ice pick or something, like chopping at it.
Battery to
do that. Yeah.
Peter Baugh of The Athletic spoke to fans who were seated nearby. Mike McNish, one of those fans, said, quote, he was basically just wailing on it as hard as he could.
I guess.
Another one said it dropped straight down. Then we heard it crumble in front of us.
It's the stress test, man. I guess it had it. You know, some things is like you are allowed 5 million shakes. I guess it was only 5 million and one. And it just shattered. Stress test, man.
I'm not a fan of the glass bangers. You know, you've got it. First of all, it probably doesn't feel very good when you're smacking on the glass, but people will go out of their way to hit the glass during board battles. And I'm like, guys, sit down.
Did he have like a ring on or something, like a wedding ring or
there's
something?
Good question. Like, I still want to hear the scientific
watch that was hitting on it,
of how it broke.
Do we have Bill Nye on the line? Can we get him in 5 minutes?
I think that's what we need.
Yeah.
Does anybody know the science guy?
Exactly. Because that is a contributing factor. If he had some, you know, his wedding ring and was beating it on there, or a watch that was beating on, you know.
Because it had to come free from the panel next to it. Like, there's a fastener at the top. Mm-hmm. It's just individual rectangular things that they put in there and they fasten them together. So the fastener broke because people were pushing on the next panel over as well. You could see it giving. But it separated from that. And then it started breaking at the top. And then the whole thing collapsed and shattered. It was really weird.
Again, you only what was do he doing? That.
I want. I'm dying winning. To know what exactly caused it to do that.
I wonder if he's allowed to come to any more games.
At some point, this person is going to do an interview, and I look forward.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think he's a season ticket holder?
With those seats,
I'm going to say yes. Ooh. I'm going to guess he's
so he can
probably
pay for that window. Yeah, he can pay for that window. Yeah.
I do worry. It's like, hey, we'll work this into your season ticket bill for next year.
We'll put it in there. Don't worry about it. And you got to pay us up.
Meanwhile, the Kings almost stole the game. They pulled ahead 1-0. The Avs tied it late and then won it in overtime. So the Kings have been very competitive with the Avalanche in the first two games. Say what you will about the Kings or all the discussion we had here in Nashville about what if the Predators got in there and they had to play the Avs? Would that even be worth watching? Well, the Kings have been competitive. And what's interesting is they have gone with their backup goalie in Anton Forsberg, who has played great. He's probably the reason that they are in the playoffs. He got him in there.
One texture says, I was going to say maybe he had on a wedding ring or something, but I don't think any woman's going to marry a glass banger.
Fair point.
Robert says, the adult grown, the grown-ass man pounding on the glass in the corner is king of the D-bags. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I just don't see how you again, he must have five too many. Just sit there and bang on the glass. And again, it's not the winning goal.
No,
a big play.
Beginning of the
it's
second
a big play.
Yeah.
All I know is I have Annie Lennox stuck in my head right now.
Walking on broken
walking
glass.
Walking on broken glass.
That song can get stuck in your head.
Sorry to everybody listening who's now going to be singing Annie Lennox for the rest of the day. Willie, I do have to ask you this. Is tonight the night that the New York Mets win for the first time in 2 weeks? Is tonight the night? Against the Minnesota Twins.
Well, let's just paint the picture last night. Last night, the Mets had their best pitcher pitching, Nolan McClain, who's a very talented pitcher. Perfect game through five. 15 up, 15 down.
And then what happened?
They had the lead, 3-0. Mm-hmm. Everything's looking good. He gives up a two-run homer in the sixth. All right, still leading. In the seventh, two-out base hit. They tie it up. Oh, boy, it's 3-3.
The house is coming.
And then the airbender comes in, Devin Williams. He was not bending anything. Walks a couple guys, gives up a couple. They give up two in the ninth, and the losing streak grows to 12 against the Minnesota Twins. Yeah. There's something about 13, Adam. I feel like it's got to get to 13.
So
and
now
then
you're,
all of a sudden the miraculous will
it.
Be in place for the miraculous turnaround. If it gets
so it's
to
almost now you're like, okay, we need 13 just so we can
something
turn
about
it.
Well, it was funny, like last night on the broadcast and all these people like on – Mets Twitter or whatever you want to call it. They're all doing their rituals of how to break out of it. Like, let's get sage out. Let's get the rabbit's foot. Let's do all these crazy, like, rain dances and stuff to try to break the curse. And still, the mayor is taking all kinds of heat. The mayor even had to make a comment on it, right? The curse of the Mambino.
What is wrong with people?
I did not see the comment, actually.
I think he made a comment.
What is wrong with people? Like,
they had to go on the record.
They use the smallest thing to say it's because of you that we're on a losing streak. You took that picture. Well, what happened before he took that picture? Maybe that's the reason why y'all on a losing streak. Or what subsequently happened after taking a picture.
Someone's got to take the blame.
Yeah,
okay?
Somebody has to.
Someone has to take the blame. I actually did see this Vanderbilt men's basketball got a transfer from Missouri, the dude with the huge hair, T.O. Barrett. Remember that guy?
That's the
I do.
Guard, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
T.O. Barrett has committed from Missouri to Vanderbilt.
Ooh, he's
that's
pretty good.
A good 1-2 punch.
He's got huge hair. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Tanner has huge hair. So there you go.
There
two
you go.
Two huge hair guys.
No bald guys in that backcourt.
Not at all.
That'll do it.
He's a good player.
He is.
They got a guy from Washington State, a guy from Nebraska. So the roster is coming around.
Still waiting for Tanner, right? Still
waiting for Tanner. I'm hearing good vibes on that, but it's not over till it's over.
That'll do it for us today. Tomorrow, thankfully, is the first round of the NFL draft. We will be live from T-Line in West Nashville to talk about it in the lead up to the first round. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, will join us at 5 o'clock. We'll mix in some Predators as well. And speaking of the Predators, the Predators season wrap-up show featuring Max Herz, Pete Weber, Terry Crisp, and Willie Donick. Coming up next here on 102.5 The Game.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. Hear that music. Don't forget about us, because we will not forget about you. We will be live from T-Line in West Nashville at 3 p.m. for the prelude. It's like the beginning of the draft. And then we hit the draft right after that at 6 o'clock. So you get a chance to listen to me from 3 to about 10 o'clock. So come on. I'm inviting you all. See you tomorrow.
Rest up.
Peace.
Rest up the voice, T-Base.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.